I'm Pave Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Tuesday edition of Unpaved. Of course, he is Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. Go like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Lot to talk about today. We have a quarterback who hasn't played in 5 years joining a practice squad. We were going to talk Monday Night Football. Our bet, we both hit the money line. If you bet it, if you followed us, you won some money last night. Charlie Weiss Jr. has taken some more of LSU's assistance in bringing them back to Ole Miss for the college football playoff run. Notre Dame's AD just keeps talking and talking and talking and talking. And then we'll have the wrath of Sean later in the show. But Sean, starting off, how are we feeling today on this Tuesday?
I'm doing great. I'm doing awesome, man. A lot to talk about, including Shedeur Sanders at the top, right?
Yeah, we're going to start off with Shedeur Sanders. I mentioned it briefly yesterday before you did your wrath of Sean on the final two-point conversion play that Kevin Stefanski and company called. But Kevin Stefanski did come out and say that Shedeur Sanders will be the starter moving forward. Now, their upcoming schedule for the last four games is the Chicago Bears, the Buffalo Bills, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Cincinnati Bengals. So you got two division rivals in there, a good Bears team that is playing well, that does turn the football over. And then you have the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen and company trying to make the playoffs, with those first three teams definitely trying to make the playoffs that they have to face. Obviously, right move here. I mean, the way he's been playing and the way Dillon Gabriel had been playing prior to the concussion, I think that Shedeur Sanders is your best option right now.
He gives you the best chance to win. I think this is the people who are rooting for Shedeur Sanders to fail. I don't understand. I don't know how you can't compartmentalize. I understand you may think he is, you've been begging for him to prove it. Now, I haven't put him in the Hall of Fame yet, nor should be. It's been three or four starts. He's just getting going. Hell, if they don't trade Kenny Pickett along the way, and if Deshaun Watson's healthy, he may not even be on this team right now, either drafted or not. Yet, the situation called for, he worked his way and waited. It wasn't his fault. Now, he adds to it because he's got swagger and people want to come to him, and he knows how to get people talking, just like his pops did. But I'm going to tell you, the way he started this game and played, he's earned the right to continue forward as the starter. Don't take what everybody was saying about him early in the season, about, oh, he should have been the first pick of the draft. That's fine. People are going to banter about that shit all the time. I'm talking about from the time he was a backup till now. What has this team done? They're better offensively. They just are. And so I don't know what's going to happen with Dillon Gabriel moving forward, but the bandwidth in the vertical passing game is far better. It just is. And for all those people out there who said, see, they're trying not to let Shedeur be successful. Now, after watching the two-point conversion, I get your argument. But let's just talk about the system of the offense and what they're doing with Tommy Rees and with Kevin Stefanski. They are pushing the ball down the field more. And so they're not holding him back. Throws for almost four Bills last week and a bunch of touchdowns. So he should be the starter, Segs, and he should go moving forward. And I like this decision. My whole thing is, who gives your best 11 the best chance to win on that roster right now? And it's him. He's gotten better. And if this continues, I'm going to tell you now, if this continues in his elevation, whether they win or lose, but he keeps improving, they will not take a quarterback in the first round next year. They won't. Now, they'll judge on the Watson thing, the Dillon Gabriel situation, and Shedeur Sanders. And what tells me, the one that the young one that's left out, and right now would be Dillon Gabriel, just based on performance. Then you'll decide on Watson and all that money that's heaped on you and what you're going to do with the young guy. You may just keep those three, may be your quarterbacks on the roster next year. But right now, I can tell you, Shedeur Sanders has earned it with his play, not with the talk and not with the banter with social media, and they're getting better. The Cleveland Browns' best chance to win is with Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback, right now. And that's whether you hate him or not. I just don't understand the hatred for him. He seems like a nice kid, brings a lot on. But I can tell you this performance, you asked him to get out there. Oh, he's getting snaps with the first team. Let's see what he does. He's showing you. The fact that he wasn't in on the two-point conversion was a coaching problem, not a player problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree 100% with everything you just said. But the reason people are hating on Shedeur, and it's not even so much Shedeur. Shedeur, you know, had a couple, you know, post-game interviews, a couple of media where he said, but a little annoying the way he said it and stuff. But it's the fans of Shedeur Sanders. It's the media that's behind Shedeur Sanders that are making him hateable. Kevin Stefanski goes out and names him the starter the rest of the season. What does Shannon Sharp do on his podcast, which gets a lot of clicks, a lot of views? He goes out there and he says Kevin Stefanski is basically putting Shedeur out there for him to fail because of the schedule with Chicago, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati. Earlier in the season, he was saying Kevin Stefanski is trying to stunt Shedeur's growth by not playing him. Now he's trying to stunt his growth by playing him. So when you keep seeing these idiots in the media that do have these platforms continue to go out there and say the dumb shit they do week after week, day after day, people start to hate the kid. And then they have to live with it because the people behind you are saying the dumb shit that pisses everybody off. And then people go to Twitter, which is big now. You know, we all have social media. We can see everything. And people hate on the kid. And then everybody's like, why does everybody hate him? This is why.
Well, it's and whether it's Shannon, I didn't see Shannon. You know, that's the first time I've heard with Shannon Sharp saying with the schedule, I don't go on to see them all. But that's the problem. We get guys talking out of both sides of their mouth or out of their mouth and out of their ass, whether it's all of us have at times. The key is you got to compartmentalize because some other former player or some media person or some former quarterback or some person on Twitter wants to judge him that way. That's a them problem. Not a Shedeur Sanders problem. And yes, sometimes when you interview Shedeur Sanders, is there this overwhelming confidence for a guy? But I'm going to tell you, having been in the position, I'd much rather have that guy without throwing teammates under the bus. You've got to start, and he'll learn to recognize the guys around him first. When you win, you congratulate them. When you lose, you take the blame. He'll learn that. He's still a rookie.
Right.
But all the other talk, he doesn't have to answer to what Shannon Sharp or what you or me or anybody else says that he should be. The problem is, the norm, we just kind of buy, oh, he said it, so it's got to be true. Here's the deal. And you can't be pissed that he's not getting work and then turn right around and when he does get work, blame him for start. Can you imagine if he just says, we're going back to Dillon Gabriel? Everybody be up in arms over it because, well, you're taking the job away from Shedeur. So you exactly. can't win. That's why I go about it, what I'm seeing on the field. I don't give a Billy Blue damn what any of these guys say on right. social media or that. And Shannon's smart. I didn't see his. Shannon gets it. But it's also, we got to understand what social media is about, say. Sometimes on a podcast, they're saying stuff that maybe they don't even believe, whether it's me, you. I try to always say what I believe because you know what? The credibility.
I do too.
Shannon's got a ton of credibility, but Shannon's a lightning rod for energy, and he brings it. And he is a great player, and he does a good job in the media. With that, I get it. But if you're setting him up to fail, the bottom line is the Cleveland Browns have been set up to fail all year long. And they also are as bad as there is at adjusting to evaluating the way they utilize quarterbacks for 30 years. They don't have a friggin' clue, which is shocking. A two-time coach a year and good coaches that when they get to Cleveland, it's almost like they have this what is that called? The Matrix or whatever. No,
yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith. They
the
zap them.
Brain eraser.
Yeah, they zap them in the mind that everything they forget. Okay. But Shedeur Sanders, you want him. I want even if they lose, they get their ass kicked. I want to see how he handles it.
Right.
And the Cleveland Browns should want to also. So regardless of social media, judge the kid by how he handles the team, what they're saying about him, meaning the players, and how they respond to making him and them better. The Cleveland Browns are a better football team right now offensively with Shedeur Sanders. 100%. I don't care if you hate Colorado. I don't care if you like or don't like Deion. I don't care if you like this podcast or somebody else's or what we say. The bottom line is you play your best 11, and right now Shedeur Sanders is one of your best 11 and gives you the best chance to win. So the bottom line is you can't just run him out there against horseshit teams because he's on a horseshit team for the most part, right. And made a better offensively.
They just lost to the Titans.
That's exactly right. So you run him out there against the good stuff. That's when you're going to find out the true depth of him. Go out there, and if he gets his ass kicked, how's he respond? If he plays great, how's he respond? Yeah, the Men in Black nebulizer. Thanks, Isaiah. So for me, this is the best of the world for Cleveland. They're not going to the playoffs. They're not a threat. But I got to know the next month what happens. So next spring, I can focus because I'm about five players away from being five players away as a Cleveland Brown. Defensively, I'm close. Offensively, I'm not. But I'm going to tell you this. They are a step closer than they were 6 weeks ago. Regardless what happens to Gabriel or Watson or anybody else, Shedeur Sanders, with his, the way he's throwing the ball and making decisions and poise, he's prepared for this. And one thing nobody talks about, he's got the DNA of a guy who knew how to deal with all this. Even though it's his dad, DNA doesn't fall far from the tree. So he understands how to deal with all the hype, hang it up outside, and then go focus on the game without the hype. He's good at it. And he's also been good at taking hits in his past. Now he's starting to get a little more smooth and relaxed in the pocket. Listen, I'm not sold on him to be a superstar yet, but I'm telling you what, I'm a lot closer than I was, not even just superstar, to be the full-time starter, I'm a lot closer than I was 6 weeks or 8 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now, judging by the way he's playing with the starters, and he's earned the right to be the starting quarterback the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think I said this a month ago or so, whenever he started or whenever we were talking Shedeur at the beginning of the season. The last time this kind of thing happened was with Tim Tebow. And let's remember, there was a lot of people who hated Tim Tebow because of the Christian, the God talk all the time, the way the media covered him.
Constant. That was the problem. I mean, it's not the kid. It's the way he's covered, the way it's people the
media.
Talk.
Yes. It's everything behind the story and the way people react to it. And that's what gets everybody so fired up.
Real quick, Segs, about that. One last thing about that. That the media and the rest of it, I will tell you that I loved him. I was able to work with him one off season, a handful of just watching him throw and talking with him, right? Spending time with him. Great guy. And I thought he was a hell of a winner in college.
Yep.
Shedeur Sanders is a better thrower of the football than he was. So we find reasons to hate or love somebody. Make no mistake about it. Shedeur Sanders got a far better chance to be a long-term quarterback in the NFL. Looks the part more than Tim Tebow did. Yet in college, he's one of the five best college quarterbacks winners we've ever had. But that doesn't always transfer, meaning Tebow. Shedeur Sanders has earned this. And whether you like him or not, or future, I'm talking about just for next week. I can't wait to see how he responds against good teams the rest of the season.
I mean, let's be fair. My 10-year-old that plays quarterback is a better thrower of the football than Tim Tebow is.
Tim might not argue that either. So there you go.
Yeah. We had some breaking news right before the show started. And this is something I never thought I would say again. I thought we kind of got past this. And yet here we go again. Phillip Rivers is signing with the Indianapolis Colts practice squad. He is 44 years old. He has not played since the COVID season of 2020. We know they lost. Holy cow.
Anthony Richardson's hurt, and yes, Riley Leonard's a rookie.
Yes. So you have those. You lose Daniel Jones. That's what I was trying to think of, to the Achilles injury. Riley Leonard's still hurt, or hurting at least.
But he's going to play.
He's going to play, and we're going to see. But they go sign Phillip Rivers. There isn't any other young quarterback, not even have to be young, just a veteran who's been around the league a little bit that you can go in and say, hey, can you come in and maybe just take care of the ball, get it to Jonathan Taylor as much as possible. Hopefully our defense plays a little better than they did last week against Jacksonville, and maybe we can sneak into the playoffs and make some noise. You got to go to 44-year-old Phillip Rivers, who last time he played, did not look very good. He looked like he was 40 years old and could barely move. I mean, we know he could barely move throughout his career. It was worse in 2020. So I don't understand this. I don't get it from the Colts perspective, and I kind of don't get it from Phillip Rivers' perspective.
Well, Segs, let me simplify this for some, and you get this, but just to tell you why this is happening. And I'll stand on a hill, die on a hill for it, or live on the hill for it. One, I'm going to tell you, Philip Rivers is doing it. He still coaches, I believe, in Alabama, coaches high school football. Yep. He can handle adversity. He's raised like 37 kids that fill up a whole congregation of church, so he knows how to handle pressure. He's going to be fine. He has all those. In truth, Seg's the easiest thing to do to walk away from football. This is going to sound weird, but it's a fact. The easiest thing to do, even though it's never easy at any point in time to walk away, the easiest way to walk away is when you're injured and they won't let you come back and play. Yep. Because they've made the decision for you. Not that you want to get hurt, but like when Emmett got hurt, or Troy Aikman, or Sterling Sharp, Hall of Famer, right? Sterling had 8 more years of great football in him, but he couldn't play anymore, yet he's still in the Hall of Fame and deserves to be there. And that decision is easy. It's when you got to make, like with Jerry Rice or Ronnie Lott, you got to make that decision for yourself when to walk away, right? When you went from the number one all-timer to the fourth receiver. Hard to do. Well, Philip Rivers, I don't think he was ready then. Comes back still, and we know he's as competitive as anybody on the planet, and he is. That's why he's coming back to play, because he still thinks he can play. And he hasn't been told injury-wise that he's physically can't. Well, look at the center for Ragnow, right, for Detroit. Mm-hmm. Wanted to come back, not as old as Philip by any stretch, but he couldn't pass the physical.
Right.
Rivers obviously passed the physical since he's on the practice squad. So the injury didn't force him out. Old age and production and people disinterested did, right, Sage? That's one. Two is why the Colts are doing this has nothing to do. I can find 100 guys physically off the street who got more arm and more athletic ability at this stage than Philip Rivers at 44 years old. And they're going to have to scale it down, because the one thing Philip Rivers doesn't have, he never had feet to get out of the pocket. He was not going to have them now at 44. So you are going to have to rely on everybody. When a backup comes in, what do they do? Say, you got to raise your game, right? Now you got a backup's coming in that's 44, been in the league going on 5 years. You know, 4+ years. So you're going to really have to elevate everything else. And as a play caller, you got to make sure you keep him out of RPO, get on the edge situations. He ain't going to move out of a hula hoop in the pocket, period. But he'll understand the timing, whether it can get there the way he wants it to with the velocity. He'll understand timing. The ball's going to have to come out earlier for anticipation. And lastly, here's why the Colts did it. First, it's an indictment on the quarterback position. No disrespect to a guy who's a borderline Hall of Famer and a great player in Philip Rivers. It's an indictment because you look all over the league, guys who've been cut, guys who've been out of the league 1 year, guys who've been out of the league 3 years, guys who were out of the league since training camp, or guys that were cut 3 months ago. You say, can't any of these guys throw it better? Sure, some of them can. That's why you say, well, why Philip Rivers? And I'm going to tell you why. The Indianapolis Colts, if they were 4-9, he wouldn't be back. Out of the playoff, they'd be starting Riley Leonard or whoever, and they'd be rolling with the young dudes and go through it. They're in playoff contention. Here's why, Sakes. They think that mentally and decision-making, he'll keep him out of bad plays. Riley Leonard's going to make some mistakes, even though he's a smart guy, if he starts. Then you're going to say, damn, audible checks, formations. He's been in the league long enough, probably knows 85 or 90%. He probably knows more than 90% of the coaches on the staff. He's been in the league and seen it from that position. Philip Rivers' ability to mentally and emotionally handle all this in a playoff team is exactly that. It's a comfort zone for Shane Steichen and the Colts. That's why they're doing it. They're not doing it because he can physically throw a bang post or get on the edge. It's the mental, emotional, security blanket side is exactly why they're going after Philip Rivers. We'll see how it works. And I wouldn't be shocked, Segs, if they pop him off the practice squad and he's playing by Sunday. They're not getting him ready to stand over there, or his ass wouldn't be there. They're getting him ready to start the playoff run to see if he can physically do it. But mainly it's the mental side and the emotional side of keeping them out of bad plays mentally, football IQ stuff.
Philip Rivers will be, I just looked it up, the second grandfather to ever play in the NFL behind Brett Favre, who had a grandchild his final year when he was playing with the Vikings. So if he steps
you're
on the
field, worried about him mentally though, right, Six?
No. Yeah, no. And the best thing is,
can he make certain throws?
Right. And the best thing is, he's been coaching so that you know that mentally that's still sharp. It's not like he's just gone and sat on a beach for 5 years drinking beers. He's still chasing kids. He's still, you know, he's coaching. He's still working at a high school doing the football thing. So, you know, the mentally he's going to be sharp. I saw him in 2020 physically barely be able to do it then.
That's
5 years later at 44. I mean, can he even throw 45 yards
down? Real quick, both sides of that, Segs. I'm with you. I said it earlier on a show out west on a radio show this morning. I said, the deal is when he was on his way out, part of the reason he was on his way out is he just couldn't make throws that he could 5 years before that, right? He just couldn't. The deep dig didn't have the same velocity on it. And then, but the other side is you're thinking, okay, maybe the time off, there's freshness in his legs and his lower half. He hasn't been beat up, hadn't played a full season. So there's a little perk in his step, right? What I do know is you're going to find out real quick. And I know this takes real quick story. When I was done playing, the first year out of working at ESPN, doing games for NFL Live and all that, Denny Green and Brian Billick both called me and wanted me to come back because it was either Randall Cunningham or Brad that got hurt, right, in Minnesota. I said no because I made a commitment. I said, when I walked away, I'm staying away. And then the second year, they did the same thing. I was actually in the press box coming to game, and Brian called me and said, you still got some magic in that arm. I said, yeah. I said, let me think about it. I went home and said, no, you know what? I made the commitment. I'm not going to be that guy. Not that I have a problem with it. Maybe I should have, because I could have milked maybe 5 or 6 more years helping teach the starter. And but they came after me for one reason, Sags, because they knew I could handle the system. They knew the verbiage, and they knew I was going to keep him in good place. And I didn't have to get a lot of work to have some success. But the other side of it, after about 2 years out, Sags, I went down on the field on the sideline for a game. And after about 5 minutes, I say, I damn well know why I'm not playing anymore. Phillip Rivers is going to go through that. The recovery is going to take longer. So we'll see if there's fresh legs, but it's the mental side that Indianapolis Colts went after him for.
Yeah, those ice baths will be very much.
He may have to do one at halftime, dude. I'm just telling you.
They need one on the sideline for me. You just jump in, jump out, and run out there. Monday Night Football last night. Chargers get the win with 22-19. The under hit by a half. Again, like we've always said, Vegas knows. And they put that number right on it. I don't know how to explain how bad Jalen Hurts was last night. I mean, watching him play the quarterback position last night felt like it set the position back a bit last night. He turned the ball over twice on the same play. I mean, it was downright awful, his play last night. And I said I didn't feel good about the Eagles coming into this game against the Chargers, not because of what the Chargers, I think, could do. I thought they could do enough to win. But because of what I watched last Friday two Fridays ago against the Chicago Bears, you can see this team is not right, definitely offensively, and they're not too right defensively right now. So I would be worried if I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan. Yes, they'll probably make the playoffs just because that division is awful. But going into the playoffs, I would not have much hope for them to even just return to the NFC Championship, let alone the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Sags, I've tried. You know, I've talked about Hurts. I think he's greatly, with his play in big games, has been underrated because he doesn't have the physical rip it, throw. He's not a pure thrower of the football that we like to see. He's a two-dimensional quarterback who's really good. I will say this, after watching last night, and you know the concerns that have come out of that building at times, right, about him and their offense and what you can do. When he's not good, he's really, if he didn't have his legs, put it this way, if he was a one-dimensional quarterback, a thrower, and didn't have his two Super Bowls postseason where he's played big in big games. That's why he's still the starter. I'll just put it to you that way. If Jalen Hurts plays bad in last year's Super Bowl, after what we've seen this year at times, Jalen Hurts is on the bench. Just so you understand this. And you know me, I've actually at times pounded the table because he wins. But you got to have 11 dudes on offense and 11 more on defense and a bunch. But he has found a way to win, and what has extended his hall pass is his play in big games and a ring on his finger from last year. Because the truth is, if it would have been a decent, you should have ran him to the sidelines and you'd have played somebody else last night. Because he is, I don't want to say sole reason, but he's a big reason why this team did not beat the Chargers last night. They had chances. They crossed the 50 and couldn't do it. He turned the ball over like it was flipping flapjacks, pancakes, right? That's what we called them growing up, Sags, flapjack, the old school. But pancakes, just keep flipping a bunch of them over like you're at a banquet where you got 70 of them. He kept turning it over to the other team, and even twice on one down for a pick and a fumble. While I respect his game, he has got to play better. They look nothing like. We talked about the Texans yesterday. The Texans' offense is more efficient than this offense right now. That's saying something. So for a team that's playoff contender, I love Jalen Hurts. I love him as a guy, and I love him as a winner. But I also know that we can't sit back and say he's a plus for them right now, because right now Segs, imagine if he didn't have his legs, that he wasn't a guy who could beat you with his legs, and he's proven that he can. I'm going to tell you right now,
he wouldn't be.
They would be so friggin' limited. I'm not sure he could. I'm not sure he'd start him.
No,
but
he wouldn't.
The thing is, he does both. He's right. Not playing well, and it's getting worse, not better, in December. He may not get a chance to prove this year that it's another big game in January if they don't pick it up. The Philadelphia Eagles, they're going to make the playoffs, but I'm going to tell you right now, they'll be an early out if their offense and Jalen Hurts plays like this. He's on. I would think, in my mind, just my visual, on a very short leash, even though it may not be benching, but a short leash for us to say, is he your guy for the next 5, 6, 7 years with all that money?
Yeah, definitely. What do you make of the Chargers? 9-4 in the AFC, obviously trailing to the Denver Broncos by a few games there in that division, but they currently sit at the 5 seed in the playoffs with their win last night. What do you make of this team moving forward as they, you know, finish out their schedule? Let me pull up their schedule here. It goes Kansas City, Dallas, Houston, Denver. So they have a tough schedule
down
the stretch, but do you give them a chance to compete with a Buffalo, with a New England, with a Denver in the playoffs to get to that Super Bowl that Jim Harbaugh is looking for?
I absolutely. You saw how often their defense turned them over last night, was able to keep their – they played good defense. The physicality of them, you know, if they were fully healthy, but you could say that about all teams this year, we know Harbaugh would like to play in that. And Hurts is out there – I mean, not Hurts, but Herbert's out there dealing with the, you know, the left – hand, wrist, arm type of thing, and still gutted it out. He's an enormously talented guy, but it's going to be his chance. And we've heard this movie or seen it before and heard this talk before. What's he going to be like? Dak Prescott. What's he going to be like? Lamar Jackson. What's he going to be like? Jimmy Garoppolo. In those big moments, last night was a big moment. He answered. He's extremely gifted and smart, but he's going to go where the offense goes, and they're going to lean on the physicality and defensive stops are important, and the big play. I give him a hell of a chance. Because you've got a quarterback that can take you on a run and load you for 3 or 4 games in January and beat you. You're damn right. The Kansas City Chiefs are damn near out of the picture, but they'll compete against the Chargers in their head-to-head game. That's a tough schedule, and it gets tough defenses. You're going to find out a lot about the Chargers and Justin Herbert before we even get to January. I do give them a chance because they've been banged up and have been able to adjust. Who's Herbert going to be in January is going to dictate where they go and their ability to stay committed to the run without abandoning it if somebody stops them.
Yeah, remember, they are without Joe Alt and Rashawn Slater. They're two very
good. That's their biggest issue physicality-wise.
Yeah, I mean, if they had those two, that offense would be completely different in my
opinion. But nobody gives a shit about their excuses in December. Everybody's got an injury.
And hey, they are 9-4, and they haven't had Rashawn Slater all year long, and Joe Alt got hurt a while back. So, I mean, it is they are figuring out a way, and they're doing what a lot of Jim Harbaugh teams do. They just – next guy comes up, and they try to physically manhandle you, and they do that to a decent extent there. Switching over to college football, Charlie Weiss Jr., we heard, is going back to Ole Miss, will be the LSU offensive coordinator next year, but he also brought 4 assistants that will go with him.
Because Lane's letting them.
Right? Yes, yeah. Lane is letting them, but he's bringing 4 back to work with Ole Miss down the stretch in this college football playoff moving forward as they take on Tulane in that first game. Right decision here. I mean, this is just kind of a, you let your guys go do their thing. Lane's taking care of LSU. The early signing day has come and passed. So now, yeah, you're still looking at recruiting. You're looking at the transfer portal, but they can go do their thing with the team that they coached all season long into the college football playoff.
And the same, the team that these guys recruited, that they went into kids' living rooms and with their parents and told them they were going to be there for them. And I know things have changed in college football, but it's okay to go back and actually live up to what you said you were going to do. I know we don't get that often in sports on either side, players, coaches, players, management, all of it. But I love it. Here's why. And the makeup call continues. Lane's trying to soften the blow for his, of course. And there's nothing wrong with that. And with the early signing date period passed, you're exactly right. They were able to go and contact all their people and keep it going. I love it. You know why? And I know this is going to sound, they owe it to these kids. They just do. You're given, why not give the guys you sweat with, cried with, struggled with, competed with, the best chance to win? And no matter how good Pete is as the new head coach and bringing people in, he's at a disadvantage because of all the, even though they didn't play last week, got a little extra work in, he's at a disadvantage because You got to coach the coaches how to put the system in. And could you imagine just having guys like, well, I don't know, what are we going to do? Who to guys taking on double and triple duty for this? This is good by LSU. Says good by Lane Kiffin. And it's wise because some of those same kids that you're sending your coordinator to and the assistant coaches say are going to end up transferring to your school. Or you may run into them down the road, regardless of what happens. And I know the rules on how, but we see it happen all the time. Remember when Lincoln Riley took Caleb Williams with him from Oklahoma, right? Happens all the time. So there's that. I just think for me, you spent far more time with your loyalty to Ole Miss than you did at LSU. You know these kids. You don't want to get rid, you're not going to run away from a brother, a sister, a family member at Christmas time because, well, I got to travel. You're still giving them their gifts.
Right.
And it's the same thing here. They deserve this. Go coach them up. Do the right thing. We don't hear that. Just do the fucking right thing.
Right.
And this is the right thing to do to give Ole Miss the best chance to compete because the truth is you went this long, this far, and have changed the scope at Ole Miss. It's time that you also, while you're changing the scope, give those kids every advantage to roll through the playoff as far as you can.
Real quick, will you be surprised if Trinidad Chambliss, the Ole Miss quarterback, follows Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss to LSU next year and kind of is in that next line of LSU transfer quarterbacks that come in big year?
But it won't surprise me, but I'll tell you what, if you're LSU, I would call up Arizona State because they already had success with one of those guys named Jaden Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, once I would call that kid up, once
Sam Lovett.
You're damn right. And say, experience. Lane's done some pretty good stuff with the guys who've come to him from other places
mm-hmm.
or that have under recruited or transfer. I would call him up right now because I know this. He can handle big games. He's seen it. It's a good way to go to start, regardless of what kind of recruits you have. It would not shock me, and no, I would not be surprised at all if also Chambliss decided to follow him because you want the best result, does the kid, to give him a system that he can operate in, no doubt.
Yeah, and he already knows Lane Kiffin's system, so that
exactly just, right.
It's kind of like the OC from Washington State that went to Oklahoma that brought John Mateer with him. So
that's exactly right.
Same kind of thing. Notre Dame, AD, we talked a lot about Notre Dame being left out of the college football playoff, being very upset about it, being very vocal. Well, Notre Dame AD Pete Bavakwa has been out just speaking his mind to anybody who will listen. He's been on multiple shows. He's done multiple media interviews. He says the ACC really, really hurt there, basically broke their relationship with Notre Dame these last couple weeks, basically campaigning against Notre Dame to make the playoff, even though they were doing it for their own member in Miami and or Duke or the ACC champion to get in to the college football playoff. I just don't understand. I mean, I get being upset you missed the playoffs. Yes, it was the ACC who was trying to get you out, but this is what the conferences are supposed to do. You're not in the ACC. I know you play a good chunk of your schedule against the ACC because you kind of have a little deal with them.
Then enjoy it.
And then they'll be right there, you know, pumping their fists for Notre Dame to get into the college football playoff. But you are an independent. I don't like this from the Notre Dame AD. It makes you look entitled as a university. And we're going to talk about something else in a second that makes them look even more entitled as an independent university. But what is your take on Bavakwa being out here just basically trashing the ACC and their relationship now?
The more people talk, meaning him, when you get to these situations, the more you dig a hole, not to build steps to get out, but to dig deeper. I am not a Notre Dame hater, and I'm a USC guy. I'm just not. I told you yesterday, I gave you both sides as to why they're not going to a bowl game and how they missed the playoff. It's not a matter of my hate for Notre Dame. What it makes Pete Bavakwa sounds like is what everybody calls Notre Dame, unfortunately, that hates him. And I don't hate him, not one bit. A whiny bastard for continuing to do this and that the entitlement that they think Notre Dame has. He just adding to it by every time he opens his damn mouth, although I understand why he's defending his school, there's got to be a better way. Just like if a player was doing this, you know what they'd say if Bavak was there? Shut up, dude. The head coach, Coach Freeman, would say, we'll handle this. You sit back. Yeah. We got this, right? So I understand he's the AD and you're politicking and you're lobbying, as all of them do, for their school. But on the other side of it, Notre Dame, well, I get it. Be quiet. First of all, the decision's done. The ACC ruined a relationship with you? Well, They had you. It'd be the equivalent of, well, I got news for you. I got all my team that I'm paying more attention to the other recruit as opposed to the guy who's on my damn roster.
Right.
Miami's on your roster. Duke is on your roster. Well, they politic for them. Yeah, they sure as hell did. There's more money in the conference. There's bonuses to commissioners and coaches. If it was me, I'd have done the same thing. Notre Dame has told us they can stand alone.
Yeah.
So why do I got a politic for you? You're Notre Dame. So I don't need a politic for you because you are the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. By not being in a conference, you've said that we can do this alone. We're not sharing any of the coin. We get to do what we love. I get 9 home games next year and 3 on the road or whatever it is. So that's it. So why, if I'm an ACC commissioner, why in the world would I politic for you that's outside? So I'm going to go get more love for the recruit that I haven't got yet as opposed to the ones I already have. I'm doing the same thing the ACC did because Notre Dame, you're a big enough brand that your performance would have said it, like beat Miami early. On the other side of this, I don't know why we're having the Notre Dame-Miami fight. Both should be in. The fight should be with the eye test. Has Alabama been good enough for you to put in with 3 losses after the way they played? Yet we're blaming Miami. All they did was want to show up and win and get in once again. So it's both sides. Pete, be quiet. We know you've laid your story out there. Let everybody else fight about it. The ACC should have pined for their own people. Now you got a choice. Want to join a different conference? Want to do it, or you want to do it alone? Because if it happens again next year and you got to pine regardless how many teams are in the playoff, you're going to lose out again. Because if you were in the big, if you were thinking about going to the Big Ten, I'm just using them as an example sake. I'm not pining for you more than I am the team that's got a chance to go to the playoff. When you're in, we'll discuss, but you're not. So it's both. Pete's overboard. It gets whiny, but a lot of people think that is Notre Dame. I give more respect to Notre Dame. I think they should be in the playoff. I do. But you got to control your own business like Vanderbilt said they didn't, so they're not in. This isn't about Miami-Notre Dame for me. This is about get into a conference and the Alabama, how they've kind of 3 losses and an ass-whooping against Georgia have kind of skirted through without everybody. It's all it's Alabama. Of course they're in. There should be more banter about did they deserve it. And I have a lot of respect for that program.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a discussion that we could have at some point again as we get closer. But also Notre Dame. Next season, they will automatically make the college football playoff if they are ranked inside the top 12. So if they are number 12, and let's just use Miami, is number 9, and the resume is better. And let's say it's the same kind of thing where you have a down ACC, or let's use like Vandy instead. You have a down ACC. Maybe that the conference champion doesn't make it because you got 2 group of 5, or it's a bad Virginia team that gets in and is going to be the 11th seed with the group of 5 team being the 12th seed. Notre Dame would go from 12 to 10 and knock whoever is at 10, even if they have a much better resume than Notre Dame. They will knock them out of the playoff automatically because of a memorandum signed by the College Football Playoff Committee last year. And if the playoff expands to 14 or 16 teams, if they are ranked, I think it's 13 or higher for the 14-team playoff, they're automatically in. And if they're ranked 14th or higher in a 16-team playoff, they're automatically in. So I don't know why Notre Dame gets this automatic bid into the College Football Playoff. I know each conference champion does, but it's the 5 highest ranked. The ACC champion got left out because of the way it was. Now Notre Dame just gets this special treatment because they're an independent. I don't understand it.
Wouldn't it be nice, Segs, to get 4 of the numbers or 5 of the numbers right and not get the Powerball number and they still reward you with Powerball?
Yeah.
That's what this is. This is and then we say, man, why'd that person get that privilege? Here we're talking about a university that has been able to call the shots and stay out of a conference and is going to get rewarded for it. Listen, Notre Dame's a hell of a program, and I think Coach Freeman's phenomenal. But we are moving the goalposts for one school. And they're going to do everything they can to cater to them even more than you think next year, Segs, because of the offseason and all the griping that's going to go along. And it's Notre Dame. We need Notre Dame there. And I do believe Notre Dame worthy of the playoff. I think they can beat a bunch of teams, and they are capable of rolling through and beating them a lot because they've been playing good football. But it's a moot point. They don't get a chance to. It's amazing to me that through all this, with all these institutions, we've decided, you know what we're going to do? Let's reward the one team that decided to stay away, but we're going to call them the belle of the ball. No matter where they are, as long as they're hovering around there, they are automatically. So they are next year, Segs, even if the eye test says, man, maybe they're not as good, but they're sitting there because they won four in a row at the end. They're going to get in automatically, even if they're not playing playoff type football. That happens every year. But if you're in a conference, we get a little bit better judgment. They get to do it. And remember, again, everything sets up for Notre Dame perfectly next year. I'm going to remind you for the fifth time from yesterday, three road games.
Yep.
Three road games. Listen, if BYU, I mean, if Notre Dame doesn't make the playoff next year, all everything went to hell in a handbasket. It's catered to them right now. And that's coming from a guy who has so much respect for the program. But the whining, and if you thought people complained about entitlement before this, come see me in the summer or early fall next year when we're rolling through it. And if they get beat early, yet they win six in a row, watch what happens. You know that's coming.
Yes, for sure. Penn State introduced Matt Campbell yesterday. It's interesting because Penn State's kind of been forgotten with all the college football playoff talk, with, you know, the Notre Dame talk, with everything that's gone on championship weekend, everything that's gone on. Penn State kind of flew under the radar with this Matt Campbell hire, who was like their 37th choice when it comes to being head coach of the Nittany Lions. So he comes out and says, you know, I'm ready to be the coach, yada, yada, yada. He talks about, or then some stuff came out about his contract that he will get an automatic one-year extension each time he makes the college football playoff. And if he wins a national title, he receives a two-year extension and $1 million more per year. So, I mean, congrats to Matt Campbell. It's a hell of a contract for you. But I think we're forgetting the fact that this is one of Penn State's last choices of, I think, legitimate, decent, good candidates that finally took the job after a lot of people said no and signed it, either the job they were at or went somewhere else.
Inevitable, Segs. I'm unapologetic about how I feel about what Penn State did through this whole thing, right? I will not apologize. They botched it from the get-go and screwed it up. I will say that maybe, and we said it loud, you know what I told you, a lateral move. You're going from Franklin to that, who's won the big game. The difference is James Franklin coached at Penn State, five-star recruits and four-star recruits galore. Matt Campbell had to coach at a place that has no business being in the top 10 when you talk about the recruiting cycle.
Right.
And he went through being the hot commodity. I may have been, I don't want to say misjudged, but not enough credit for the hire. Now, because Penn State made him their 40th guy on the list, Segs, maybe they shouldn't have from the get-go. Maybe that's where we missed it. This is more than lateral. You know, I went back and thought after I said it and listened to comments of others, but watching and going back and look at Matt Campbell's success at Iowa State. And you know what? This is a good hire. It shouldn't have been the 15th guy on the list. He should have been looked at the second Penn State went away with James Franklin because of what he's done with lesser. It's like anytime I see Iowa State or like Kansas State when Bill Snyder was doing what he did, difference in age. They're in a conference. It's competitive as hell. Happen to battle all the time. And they're at a disadvantage to the Oklahomas, to the when they were competing in the Big 12 against each other, or even the TCUs. Right. They're getting different players. So his ability to get them believing that they're better, now he's going to one that should be in the playoff every year and should be better, and now he has a chance to operate, to develop guys that come in held in a little higher regard. Now keep the hunger and get Penn State and get the tradition going. I think that we have undersold us and me that Matt Campbell was a good hire. It's because if it took so long, we automatically lumped him in. You're the 25th best coach. No, maybe Penn State's so screwed up that they took them about 18 to 20 guys before they got to the guy they probably should have been looking at in their top five choices when this situation started. Matt Campbell, I don't want to say apology. Matt Campbell's better than we've given him credit for. It may not be a sexy hire, but it's a guy who has taken just like Franklin did at Vanderbilt before he got to Penn State. This right. is at Iowa State before, and a little more at Iowa State, but Iowa State before he gets to Penn State. How we're going to judge Matt Campbell is in the big games, which James Franklin wasn't. His teams were not well prepared enough to win those big games, or just choked under pressure. Matt Campbell will help this team better than James Franklin did when it gets to it. Then we'll see how he does with 4- and 5-star recruits in the postseason. They will make the postseason in the next year or two with Matt Campbell if they can fix some of that recruiting and delve into the transfer portal stakes and get some guys that can help right now.
Well, lucky for him, if he does make the college football playoff, he gets an automatic 1-year extension.
And another mill. That's a nice little January signing bonus, Sags.
Yes.
Yeah.
That definitely helps. Time for the Wrath of Sean. Montana State had a little bit of an incident after their game this past week, and it involved a coach and a player. So, Sean, take it away.
Well, do we get to see the video, Segs? I think we do. Hopefully we do if we have that video. Here it is. This is post-game. And the talk is, Segs, before I jump in, you guys, I keep your mic going. The talk is, I mean, they're going over there to talk like you do after every game.
Mm-hmm.
There was, and I waited to pounce on this because I want to make sure, and you and I talked off the air yesterday, I think, or maybe at the end on it, about why this happened. Was the player going to talk trash and the coach is trying to stop it? Was it good football programs, both of them? Was the player going to go over there and put them in a bind and get himself in trouble? According to the player, this is a guy he played with at a different school, and they were buddies, right? So he was going over there to do it. Then the coach walks in, and I don't know if they're having banter, but it looked like that player's tapping one on the helmet like there was no big deal. Here's what it looked like to me. We always go to the player first, so what a bad attitude. Maybe, just maybe, the coach at times should recognize and know the room as well. Because now, the player self-admittedly got out of hand here. You've got a subordinate. Even if you don't like what he said, when he decides to tell you, let's go, you got to go, right? That's the part that the player has to understand. But for me, it's a post-game. You're taking care of your business, going to talk to him. What is the coach doing milling around the players? We do this after every game. You don't need to immerse yourself in everything. So you need to know the room, leave the player alone. And this isn't abuse that he pushed the player away, grabbed him by him, moving him away. It's not like he hit him, trying to talk to him. The player got out of hand with too much emotion. The coach got a hand by just getting in the way. Just move your ass out of the way. You just do. Most of us will side with the coach in this situation. It appears to me like it's two dudes just trying to get together and hang out. And a coach got in his feels and decided he was going to lay the non-mall cop on him and, you know, boom, let's go and let's get this guy out of the way. What I mean by that, Sags, kind of going over above what his,
yeah,
where he should be. He didn't get in his, stay in his lane from my vantage point. Now, there may be something else that's said underneath or he heard something. It looks like a miscommunication. Both handled it wrong. The player went overboard after the coach addressed him, and the coach absolutely was in the wrong lane. Matter of fact, just leave the players alone. You could see how frustrated the kid was. They both got to control it better. But had he not gone after the player, we probably wouldn't even be talking about this.
No, we wouldn't.
Because the coach, the player trying to fix it, and the coach's raw emotion, or the player's raw emotion after a game, got him. And we got to understand that. Nobody got hurt. It'll go away. But the player and the coach obviously have a problem here at the end of the game. And maybe it was the coach who started the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear in the video when you look at it that, you know, the other team's player taps him on the head, you know, kind of like either good game or good to see you, whatever it is. And then he goes to talk to somebody else, and that's when he's pulled away. And you can see the other player with the helmet put his hand up, kind of like wave to him, like, you know, yes, hey, what's up? And then, boom, he's gone. And then he gets pissed at the coach. And this is just a coach stepping in, not reading the situation in the right way. And, you know, yeah, did the player go a little too far with his reaction?
Sure.
But, I mean, this is a coach doing something he doesn't need to do. And
I haven't
seen the coach come out with a comment on it or an explanation or anything. But the kid came out. He apologized to his coach, his team, for the way he reacted. He also gave his side.
Then let's move on, right?
Yeah,
right. I'm with you. Move on. Here's another thing, Segs, which I don't like. What coaches need to understand, go shake the other coach's hand. Get your ass to the locker room.
Yeah.
Go do your interviews. Players will police this. They're not going to let one guy get in a fight and not get in front.
Right.
Or your security or the opponent. There's enough people around. You don't have to police everything. You don't have to be a micromanager of post-game handshakes. If it gets to the point, somebody will report back to the coach and said he started it. We'll address it in-house. This made it look like coach and player hate each other, that the player was going to start a fight and the coach was going to immerse himself into every conversation. There comes a point in time when a coach them, the game's over, get your ass to the locker room, let the players police. Players are usually going to defend what they need to defend. Give these kids a little responsibility with that. He over-emotionalized it, if that's the word, did the player. But I get it right after a game. That's why we always say, well, you're putting a mic in somebody's face. You know, we always complain about the kid was emotional for whatever reason. And then the coach heightened it by he just threw gasoline on it. And then he's trying to get off and play Mr., you know, police in the situation. Get your ass in the locker room. Let the players let you know they'll protect their own. And in this case, it obviously from the kid, didn't appear they needed to protect anything other than the coach immersing himself in micromanaging a post-game conversation and handshake. And if they were mad at each other, let them be mad. Let them argue a little bit. So what? So what if the player and the player were like, hey, man, you cheap shot it, or hey, man, I had you in their banter and gamesmanship. So what? Nobody got hurt. If they did, players know how to step in and stop the situation. You're right. And if he apologized and moved on, move on. Coach needs to move on. Player needs to move on. And we all need to move on from it.
One of the biggest topics in college sports over the last few years has been name, image, and likeness, NIL. We see kids getting paid extraordinary amounts of money to go play at a school coming straight out of high school with this, you know, new NIL era that we're in. Well, we're seeing the other side of it as well, as Georgia has asked a judge to force former defensive end Damon Wilson for almost $400,000 in transfer damages for breaking the terms of his contract. According to Georgia, Wilson played in 2023 and 2024, transferred to Missouri 2 weeks after signing a new deal with Georgia's Classic City Collective. So we're starting to see this stuff that will only get worse and worse as these transfers keep happening, that, you know, a lot of kids are, and we've heard of kids doing this. They go somewhere, they get a little bit of NIL money, and then they transfer the next year. Or in Caden Proctor's case at Alabama, the big offensive tackle, who's going to be a first-round pick this year. Remember, he committed to Iowa as, I think, a junior or sophomore, and then right before signing day, flipped, went to Alabama, played there as a freshman, was a dominant force because he's massive. Well, he transferred to Iowa, got a chunk of change from Iowa, didn't play a snap at Iowa, and transferred back to Alabama. And I don't know whatever came of that. We never heard the story where it, you know, how it worked with the money with Iowa, but we've heard of stories like that. Now Georgia's saying, no, we're taking you to court to get that money back that you basically took from us and then bailed and went to Mizzou, one of our conference rivals. So this NIL situation is only going to get worse as more and more loopholes are figured out. As we know in college sports, they're always figured out by boosters and NIL collectives now, that it's going to be something we have to pay attention to over the next few years.
I'd have done the same thing if I was Georgia. We can't call it frivolous. Now, I don't have the contract, the NIL contract, or Georgia's agreement with the guy in front of me. Neither do you. And they're not going to show you that, I wouldn't imagine, unless somebody can get in and has inside and can release it. But I will tell you this. When NIL started, I said, you're going to face this problem. A booster is going to donate a lot of money, say, I want to give money, NIL money, to that cat right there. And he's going to either miss his commercials, not live up to the obligation, whatever it is. And then he's going to bail and try to keep all the money. And I said at that point in time, you're going to face legal problems, and this is going to get ugly, because now you're basically talking pro sports. You're talking, you couldn't leave in the middle of a contract if you're a player in the NBA, just leave. Right. Now I know player empowerment's real, and expect to get paid by that team if your conduct detrimental. I said at that point in time, you can't pay him all up front. I don't know what they did here. If he signs like a $1 million contract, I'm only paying you for services rendered. Period. You want, if it's a $3 million deal like Nico had at Tennessee or here, you're getting paid just like normal people. You did the job. Oh, you finished the construction. You finished the building. Cool. We paid you a little up front when you came here. And then every step of the way, you pay. We'll pay for services rendered. You go get a haircut. You pay for the haircut, right? Same thing here. You don't get to go in and grab it and then bolt and not be held accountable. And I said, that's going to be rampant. There's going to be more players do that. And some schools may not want the hassle because they don't want you diving into their books. In this case, More than a quarter of a million bucks, almost 400 grand, the guy bolted with, you're damn right I'd want him to pay it back. He can keep what the services rendered if he had to do a deal or an appearance. You keep that. But if we gave you a Ferrari, and it's a light Ferrari, but you have to fulfill the contract, and you only fulfilled a quarter of it, take a tire with you and get your ass the Ferrari, deliver the car back. So I'm on the team side on this. Unless, of course, the team paid him up front, said, we trust you, and it's a handshake. Unfortunately, handshakes don't seem to hold the water they did years ago. Then he's going to run away, and they're going to lose. But if he took it, and it was it was a blatant breach of contract, I'd sue his ass six ways to Sunday and twice on Sunday to get that money back, to send a message. And Kirby Smart's made it clear about all this transfer portal and stuff, how he's looking at it different. I would make sure I get that money back. And if nothing else, if there's a settlement, at least you've sent the message to future recruits. If you come here or go anywhere else, you'll get paid by services rendered. Other than that, you try to bolt, you will be. So don't go spend $400,000 if you're planning on leaving, because it's going to come back out of your next NIL paycheck from the other school.
I mean, I just don't understand. It's clear they gave him the money up front, because they would just say, okay, you're gone. Like, we're not paying you.
Yeah, services rendered, you got yours. Yeah.
So, no, I mean, it's clear that these
kids. Why would you do that if you're Georgia? What an idiotic way to go about your business.
I mean, these kids are getting hundreds of thousands of dollars just up front. Here you go. I mean, it's crazy.
I'd make him pay back every penny that he didn't serve the render services sakes, every dime, every one of them.
I mean, it's crazy. And then we have NIL, you know, you're getting your money. You could basically kind of do what you want with it as long as you fulfill your services that they want in return. But they're also being spent on some other stuff, as John Calipari told us, and we have a video of it. It's just funny what some of the, and he's also kind of complaining about how the NCAA is doing with the
old dudes.
Yes, older guys playing and giving guys seventh, eighth, ninth years of eligibility in college sports in general. But here's what John Calipari had to say.
I mean, there are a lot of older gentlemen with beards playing basketball in college right now. There are. So the one that's crazy is the guy comes in and he's waving to his kids up in the seats. And you're like, wait a minute, the guy got two kids. He's still playing college basketball. Crazy thing, he's using NIL for his first wife's alimony. And now he's still playing college basketball. Are we nuts? So now you have these kind of games and these kind of scores. That team is really old. My guess is, again, we're probably the youngest team in the SEC. We'll be one of the three youngest teams in the SEC. Those teams are old. Last year, every team was old in our league. They were old. And so now you're going to have those kind of things. And you're also going to have a team like a Fresno beat somebody because they got all grad students, seniors, and their average age is 25.
I mean, he's not wrong here.
No, Cal's not wrong. The one thing I do want to, Cal's great because he says it so softly and matter-of-factly. It's as if there's a message that he always sends while he's saying that. And there's an excuse in, my team's young, be patient. That's part of what he's trying to say. The other side is, I got news for Cal. Those kids in the stands aren't just reserved for 26, 27-year-olds. There's high school kids who are going to come to your program that have two kids and maybe three baby mamas, and they're doing the same thing. And they're 19, and they're not 27. So, but he does make a point about the age and NIL and paying alimony. But if it's yours and they didn't tell you, well, you can't spend it on alimony or your babies, then what do you spend it on? You want to go, you're encouraging the kid to go to frivolously buy his fourth car. So I get what Cal's saying. We got to put a lock down. You know what I would say, Segs, and this is for another whole conversation, but to close this out. And I said it to you, I think we talked about it earlier, a long time ago, or a year ago. I would tie NIL disbursement to attendance and academic requirements, working towards graduation, GPA. If you're a kid that doesn't show up to class, then until you're showing up 80 for whatever the percent, you're not getting that money, because you can't. And I would make them all have to enroll in money management. If we're paying you like a pro, put it on your academic requirements now as a must, not an elective, as a must. So when you get out, at least we've given you a chance that if you made $3 or $4 or $5 million and you don't make the pros, you got a head start on life. So, but in this case, the old stuff, yeah. But Cal, like I do swear, there's 21-year-olds who got three kids too. Some they know about, some they don't. We all joke about that. And it's not just in basketball, it's in golf and football and baseball and all of it. But the age thing says, you know, I don't believe you should be getting 9 years to play college sports. I'm just sorry. There's got to be an age where it's time to move on.
And now they're letting foreign players come over, join the G League, which is it's basically a professional league, just not the NBA. And then they're allowing schools to go in and recruit those kids and bring them when they're 21, 22, and they're freshmen.
Yeah, they got 4 years. They got 5 years to complete four, 6 years.
Yes,
to complete four,
yes.
Right.
So I mean, it's crazy with the way. And this is kind of the wild, wild west we talked about when the NCAA kind of basically stopped making rules or stopped enforcing stuff, and then allowed the NIL thing came into play. A lot of this stuff was going to be done by these schools in finding loopholes and ways to get better players to their program, and especially with the transfer portal. You know, when with transfer portal just basically open to everybody every single year for the most part, it is the wild, wild west when it comes to college
sport. And when they try to regulate it, at some point you're going to have a union and a player rep for every school in college sports. You just will. You're going to need it. You know, but I'll tell you another thing that's coming down the pike, Segs, is that you'll get a big-ass class action lawsuit like they did against the video game thing. If you try to go back and say, we're not doing this anymore, can't do it. You've already shown the 10-carat diamond ring.
Yeah.
You ain't going back to cubic zirconia. It's going to need regulated, though, and done right, because it's not done right now.
Well, and, you know, something else you just said that kind of sparked a thought of what someone else said. You mentioned that, you know, these kids need to be going to class, and that should be part of the NIL thing, and they should have to take a money management course and learn how to take care of their money, if it's, you know, getting a representative to take care of it, whoever it is. Or you could just be like Odell Beckham Jr. and tell us that $100 million doesn't get you anything anymore. And, you know, it's hard to live on a $100 million contract.
My favorite thing about that, Segs, is what he said. $100 million, I mean, after taxes and all you do pay, you only got $60 million left. I'm like, I can't listen to this anymore.
Fuck out of here.
I can't listen. I cannot. I was, you sign a $100 million deal, but man, people don't realize that. Yeah, it's tough if you're buying 17 homes and you're not paying your taxes, or you pay your taxes and you didn't think about that when you got it and say, damn, I made $5 million, but I spent $7 million, so I'm two in the hole, and taxes hit me too. All those things that go back to why you should have money, man, and make it not an elective, but a must. But that's my favorite. My favorite. Hey, man, talk about not knowing the room. You make a $100 million contract, and you only get 60 of it, 65 of it with taxes. Man. I'm like, I check out. I'm done. Yeah. I am done. The fact that it even rolled out of his mouth and off his tongue let you know that you should not listen to the rest of that, because you'll be flabbergasted by the ignorance and not talk about not knowing the room, brother. There you go.
It might be tough if you're someone like Tyreek Hill, who has like 14 kids and 12 baby mama or something, whatever it
Put
is.
Put a Jimmy on, dog.
That's a lot of child care payments that you got to be making.
Unless, of course, you want to start the only thing to that is you're trying to get, because you want to open up a franchise out, you know, babysitting schools to where, what do they call those things?
Daycares.
And you're learning how to do it because you want to run 50 of them. I get it, but that's usually not the case.
I feel like there's a better way to learn that than just having a ton.
Yeah, double bag it. And I'm not talking about over their face. Okay, so there you go.
Some of them might have.
Some you might need to if you run into a mullion. Yeah, you might have to double bag their face. Just love them for their personality. But then again,
I've never.
You know, if you run into one that could make a skunk's butt pucker, then you probably, that's probably not the place to go.
I've never heard it called a mulligan before.
And what about if you run into the one you look at
you
her?
You can't call a chick a mulligan.
I just did. Anyway, what about this, Sex? The one where you the night before you went there, you roll over, you go, oh! Yeah, right, that one? Yeah. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
You text your buddies, hey, I'm taking a mulligan.
Yeah, and not only that, you also do your buddies. Yeah,
this doesn't count.
We're playing from the white tees, not all the way back. And then you take a look and say, ooh, buddy.
So you're saying basically that one doesn't count.
There's plenty of women that do probably do the same thing. Like, what the hell did I bring home? Oh, yeah. Damn. So I don't know if she can't, or if she or he can't sneak up on a glass of water because they're so ugly, it's best to keep it moving.
Holy shit.
Hey, Mark. I hit that one OB. Can I retit? Yeah. Retit.
But a mulligan, yeah. It's got to be like that first night, like you call the mulligan. It can't be like a 3-year marriage and then you're like, hey guys, I need a mulligan here. Like, no. You played the course enough,
dude, you know where to hit that golf ball on this course. Remember there. And guess what? You don't get to back out 3 years in. You are in. Yeah. That was your problem, not ours. But I'll tell you what, dude, those pot bunkers can become a problem. So you need mulligans. Yeah,
especially when you hit those.
And pot all you bunkers dudes out there, don't kid yourself. There's plenty of good looking women that have looked at you and said, damn, that mulligan dude would make a train take a dirt road. There you go.
All right, let's get out of here. Our bet of the day. Got college basketball tonight. Another really good game. We got number 18, Florida, who struggled to start this season.
A lot of burden from last year after that hellified run last year.
And you know, almost came back, won that game against Duke last week. Still have a ton of talent, still trying to figure out, Todd Golden trying to figure out how to, you know, get these guys playing together as a team with some transfers coming in. And then they're facing number 5 UConn. This game's in Madison Square Garden tonight. UConn -3.5. If you want comedy, just watch Danny Hurley on the sideline.
My favorite.
Just watch him. Don't even pay attention to the game.
We're going to get Danny on the show. Love him. Yeah,
just watch.
I'm not making this choice based on it. UConn's going to beat him by more than that. Give me UConn on a muddy line regardless.
He is a certified lunatic on the
sideline.
He's
must-see TV, dude.
I mean, the way he looked. Oh, yeah, one of the best coaches in the country. But
he's got Chevy Chase facial expression
and talks to the officials just like, or when a player screws up and he's just kind of on that one leg, just staring at them with one of those faces.
Death stares. Oh yeah. Mean mugs. And I want to sit on the bench in one of Danny's games with a coat and tie on just so I can hear it up close and personal by myself. I friggin' love him. UConn, as much as I respect Florida, UConn I think is a little too good for this one. And basically, Madison Square Garden for them is kind of a home game sakes because I think the Hurley family is a New Jersey family and the rest of it. They'll be ready to go. They're playing at the Mecca. Give me UConn by like 5 or 6 sakes. I'd take them on the money line, but what are they, 3.5-point favorites, right?
Is that
what
you said? 3.5-point
favorites. UConn will win it straight out, but I think they're going to win it by more than that anyway. So this is a 5-6-point game. I like UConn.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It'll be interesting to see if UConn gets Terrace Reed back, the big guy that they've kind of been waiting on, but their backup center has played tremendous.
And they're still pretty good. Really
part of the
they're still pretty damn good, yeah.
Yeah, so, all right, well, tomorrow we'll start looking ahead to the NFL weekend schedule. We got some big games, teams fighting for playoff spots, and who knows, maybe we'll get some video of Philip Rivers in a wheelchair on the field trying to throw footballs. I mean, that's,
well, I got news for you, Sage. He's going to want to put a suit of armor on because those hits, you're not going to recover as much as fast. But he has been signed to the practice squad and they're not having him there to learn football. Philip Rivers is going to play sooner than you think, or he would not have gone from Alabama high school to playing football. He's not there to hold a clipboard for Riley Leonard. Make no mistake. He may wish he was after a few of those hits, but God love him and his competitiveness. I can't wait to see it.
I just flipped on Twitter real quick and refreshed just to see if anything has happened, you know, in the last few minutes or whatever. And the first thing I see is Philip Rivers running to the end zone. And then have you seen that video of the extremely old gentleman? I mean, he's in his 90s, I'm pretty sure.
Walking
he's at the Kansas practice and they let him score a touchdown. I'll retweet it. So go to Adam G. Sager on X and just, I mean, it takes him 19 seconds to go about 15 yards. Well, and that's what they say Philip Rivers is going to look like. It was just tremendous.
Philip Rivers, this is going to be the first time in history that there's an hourglass on the sideline that they're going to flip it over when Philip breaks out of the pocket. I got news for you. This player has more quick twitch than Phillip's going to have, although Phillip's going to throw it. You do not want Philip Rivers on the edge. Although he'll have fresh legs, Sags. Fresh legs. That's nice.
Sean, he's 44. He doesn't have fresh
anymore. Well, fresher than he did when he left. How's that?
Okay, maybe it's 5 years later.
Maybe
it's,
not. Maybe the, maybe he's trimmer and down to, I don't know, but I can tell you this. You may have to, you could probably go to a commercial break and come on back.
And he's Phillip's still running.
Still in a mad dash to the end zone. That's right.
Yeah.
Question is, he ain't going to be under center a lot. I imagine he'll be in the gun, so he's already set back 5 yards with his heels at 5, I would imagine. Saving the drop back.
He can't drop back anymore, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. All right. Watch this guy go over 300 yards a week and they win every game, and he comes back, and it's the greatest story in sports history.
Yeah.
Watch.
We'll see. Riley Leonard is in line to start this week for the Colts as they try to save their playoff lives after such a great start to the season, and then for it to go out like this with an Achilles to Daniel Jones just sucks because it was one of the better stories in football. Yeah,
he was having a really good season too.
Yes, thanks to Triple E, thanks to Laura, thanks to Bailey. As always, make sure you go like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Thanks to all our listeners and watchers, and we will be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central.
Peace. Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.